Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Oh, here we go. The transfer portal announcements have started. So, such weird timing. Let's go to our next guest, C.J. Moore, who writes about college basketball for The Athletic. C.J., good morning. How are you?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
Okay, so I've seen people complaining about this, and I agree. The timing of it's weird. Why does the transfer portal open the day after Selection Sunday?
It's a good question. I think it's, I guess, to give everybody that stinks a head start.
So, right. You know, competitive balance.
they've shortened the window now to, I believe, from 60 days to 45 days, which is music to my ears because I handle the transfer portal rankings, and that means – you know, after the 45-day window, it'll be you'll still have probably some grad transfers jumping in there, but it'll quiet down a little bit. So it lessens my workload a little bit. But, it's probably too early. I think it should open right after the national championship game, I would think, because it puts these schools that, you know, that are going on a run, like you can be in the Final Four and having Zoom calls like with transfers. So that's not ideal.
All right, so we played Tom Crean going off on teams that are declining their invitations to the NIT, and basically saying that, Jay, can we play a little bit of that for people that missed it? I want, CJ, you might have already heard it, but maybe some people have it.
Yeah, good after Tom.
Tom Crean is all pissed off at teams not going to the NIT. Let's hear what he had to say.
There's no question about it. I would want to coach. I would want to develop my team. You've got bigger staffs than you've ever had. There's plenty of time for the portal. There's plenty of time to talk to recruits. There's plenty of time to negotiate NIL deals. There's not plenty of time to play. There's not plenty of time to get your players on the floor and give them a chance to get better. There's not plenty of time for guys to continue to play that may never get to play again. And that, to me, is absolutely ridiculous. It's each coach's choice. I get it. But if you take away a chance to play the games, to put your team on the floor, let them opt out. All right, the bowl season has it all the time. Let it happen. Who cares? Give your players and coaches a chance to keep coaching and playing. Wow. And don't shortchange. If a guy doesn't want to play, go sit out. If a coach doesn't want to coach, go recruit. But there's got to be enough people to put 5, 6, 7 people on the floor and go play. Makes absolutely zero sense to me.
So I understand his points, but I also understand, like, if you're a coach that's on the hot seat because you didn't make the NCAA tournament and you feel like you got to win next year, that you want to immediately start trying to, you know, focusing on protecting your players you want to keep and going after players that will help you get to where you want to go. And so I can't blame them for saying no to the NIT and focusing on the transfer portal because of the timing of it, right?
Yeah, I get it. I mean, there's multiple different ways to look at it. You could say, like, it's kind of like bowl season. Like, you get those extra practices. That's beneficial. But from a competitive standpoint going forward, it's probably the smart move. But I also, like, what message does it send to your current players? Like, we don't – or you guys that are about to graduate. Like,
right.
We don't really care about you. Like going to NIT – while it's not what guys dream about, like, at the end, if you win it, like, it is pretty fun. Like, and usually it springs the board team into, you know, some success the next season. You see that a lot. You know, there was Texas a few years ago when they won it. I think, you know, they had a better year the next year. So I can see both sides of it, but I like Tom's energy. It kind of reminded me of Gandhi back in the day. This was brought to me by a mother of children.
That's right. He was very angry. Okay, so a couple of – I was mad. I'm not going to get into resumes or everything else, but I wanted Providence to make the tournament because of Kim English. Yeah. And then I wanted Indiana State to make the tournament partially because of you. And you talked about it. So then I watched them and I said, I want to see them in the tournament. I loved the Missouri Valley final. And so, but now this could be the double groin punch for Indiana State. Not only did they not make the tournament, but now is their coach going to St. Louis U?
I think he's probably going to go somewhere. I did see the report that I know St. Louis has been talking to him, and I think that would be a really, really good hire from them, and a triple punch to Indiana State. Good chance that a lot of his guys, his starting lineup, would probably follow him, and you could see Slew here in the NCAA tournament a year from now if he doesn't get that job and he does bring some of his guys with him. Because he has an NCAA caliber team, on his campus right now, and the guys that are loyal to him. So, if St. Louis makes that move, and if they're able to grab him, which I'm sure there's some high majors interested as well. I know there's some high majors interested as well. It'd be a great move for Slip.
Why was the committee wrong in not taking Indiana State?
Well, I tweeted out a story yesterday that kind of laid out the argument for them. It's so hard when you get down to the final teams and trying to, especially with all the bid thieves there were this weekend. I don't envy the selection committee because I'm sure they had to crumple up a bunch of different brackets and throw them in the trash and had probably multiple iterations of this thing because of everything that's crazy that went on. And I think when you look at the bracket, you kind of see like, this was like their fifth try because some of this stuff doesn't make sense. Like Connecticut has probably the hardest path there is to get to the Final Four of one seed. Auburn is their fourth seed. Auburn's number four in the country at KenPom.com. That's rough. I'm not sure they evenly distributed the teams as far as how they put it together, but it's hard to put a bracket together and bracket principles and all that. So I'm not going to get too worked up about it. But when I saw the bracket, I was like, this is interesting.
Were you surprised at all that Kansas maintained a four seed considering the way their regular season and Big 12 tournament went?
No, just because they take a look at the entire picture and who has as good a three wins as UConn, Houston, and Tennessee. Like, those are three really, really good wins. I think when you look at Kansas, when you pull back and look at the entire picture, the resume is still, worthy of that. They don't, it used to be they I think put a little more weight on how you finish, but now it's every game's weighed evenly.
I guess so. At least as far as I know, do they still factor in whether or not you have your players, though? I know that KU's saying that those guys are most likely going to be back, but do you think that did?
Yeah, I think that.
Should that factor in?
I think sometimes that's taken into consideration, but that's why, if you have guys that are hurt, you should probably say, yeah, I think they're going to play. So we'll see if those guys do play. I do believe that they probably will. But I think that's maybe like a sliver of consideration, but I don't think it's like something that really, really, really factors in big time as far as where they're putting teams and where they're seeding them.
All right, let's dig in now. And let's help out people fill out the brackets. Let's start off with a big difference of opinion between C.J. Moore and Nate Buchady. C.J., you have Kansas losing in the second round to Gonzaga. Mm-hmm. Nate has Kansas marching right through Purdue onto the Elite Eight. So let's hash this.
You got those crimson and blue glasses on this morning, baby.
Let's hash this out right now, please.
Well,
I was laughing out loud when I was filling my bracket out last night, but hey, man, I decided to go for it.
No. Here's what I told my friends last night. I'm a Kansas grad, so I'm in group chats with lots of Kansas fans. So I can understand how you can talk yourself into KU going in on a run because let's just start with Samford. I actually think it's, and I wrote this in my bracket picks, I actually think it's a good matchup for Kansas right now, this Kansas team right now, because Samford is going to press you. Then they're going to fall back into a zone a lot of times. I think that KU's guys like DeJuan Harris, Kevin McCullough, Johnny Furphy, KJ Adams, those guys are built to play in the open course, right? Like they want to play faster. Getting into like a slow half-court game, half-court possessions, man, you know, facing a man-to-man defense, like Bill Self can scheme up some layups against the zone, right? Like, so I actually think DeJuan Harris, like it'll get them playing a little looser and freer because of that style. So I think Stanford, good matchup for Kansas. I've also watched those guys that, you know, it's Bucky McMillan is an awesome story, and I encourage people to go to The Athletic and read Kyle Tucker on Bucky McMillan and Buckyball. Like, it's a super fun story. But I've watched them, like, their guards aren't great. They've got a tiny little guard starting on the perimeter who's a D2 transfer. So I'm with you on KU advancing there. And then McNeese State could pull off the upset against Gonzaga, and Will Wade is a heck of a defensive coach. I almost think, you know, I don't know, would you want to face Gonzaga or McNeese? I'm not sure. But the Zags, they're not your traditional Gonzaga. So, yeah, you could see KU winning that game. I think Gonzaga is playing a lot better than Kansas right now, and it's still probably, while it's not as good as the Gonzaga team has been in the past, they're still pretty good. So, and then you get to Purdue, and you've got two huge centers facing off. Probably, you know, not the worst matchup for Hunter Dickinson, right? Like, he's not going to get – Zach Edey's not taking him out to the perimeter, so – I can understand the argument there, and then if, hey, if you get Tennessee, Kansas has already beat them. So maybe KU gets right and goes on a run. It wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world, but to me it looks like a team that's confidence is broken right now.
Yeah, I actually agree with all that. I mean, I was laughing, like I said, when I filled it out because I could see them losing in the first round, you know. But mm-hmm. but I – And what you said there about their confidence looking broken, I don't like to make too much of body language. I guess I do. Maybe I do like making too much of body language. The body language of the team, when I watched them being announced, I was at the game they played against Cincinnati in the Big 12 tournament, and the guys sitting on the bench, I'd never seen like a less confident-looking Kansas team under Bill Self, like ever. And obviously, you're losing your two best players, and they know it. But I feel like in the past, even when KU's lost their best players, they've had other guys that had that swagger to them, like, we're still Kansas. They didn't look that way to me at all. And so I hear what you're saying. And I guess, like, I filled out the bracket partially just on the idea of chaos. And as I went through the bracket, it, you know, I just kind of had some fun with it. But I do think you can see it if somehow McCullough and Dickinson actually do really come back and they're really themselves, I can see the team getting a boost of self-confidence there. And they have shown multiple times, not just like once or twice, that they can beat the best teams in the country when they have those guys. So I just decided I'd have a little fun with it. But I don't know, man. I think this is the most disparate. Like, I feel like the difference between how far KU could go, like how good it could be or how bad it could be, is the widest it's ever been in the Bill Self era coming into this tournament. Is that a fair way to look at it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, I talked to Billy Gillespie, called me recently, who, you know, used to work for Bill Self, obviously. And he said, you know, when Bill's best, it's when people are counting him out. So we'll see that. But what I want to see, like in that Cincinnati game, like it was, okay, they're going to come out and they're going to have to shoot some threes and make some threes and, you know, play a little, like, there's nothing to lose here, right? Like, you got your two guys out. Nobody's expecting you to do that. And like you said, like, confidence wasn't there. It should have been, I thought it was going to be, hey, kind of a Jay Wright mentality. Like, come out, shoot them up, sleep in the street. Like, you know, that's what you you wanted to see those guys. Like, let's lose some threes. Let's play a little bit looser. But I didn't see that. And the stats that you know, worries me probably the most is, you know, I had it in my story after that KU loss, is over the last 6 weeks, when you look at just three-point shooting in college basketball, Kansas has been better than one team percentage-wise. Wow. In college basketball. It's North Carolina, A&T. That's the list. That's it. So that's worrisome to me. Like, and, you know, those were some games that McCullough played, and Dickinson played in, you know, almost all of those. So I think it's just the shooting is broken, and until they can start making some perimeter shots and people respecting that again, it's going to be really hard for them in the half court.
Yeah.
All right, we have C.J. Moore from The Athletic on the line right now. And, again, I'm looking at the bracket that you filled out. You had a couple of one seeds bowing out in the second round. You have North Carolina losing to Mississippi State, and you have Houston losing to Nebraska. Is this because of your lack of faith in those two number one seeds, or there's something in particular you like or don't like about that matchup in the second round for them?
Yeah, for North Carolina, you know, one, I was trying to have a little bit of fun.
Oh, well, because something's going to happen. Why not try to predict it?
Happen, right.
Right.
But I do think North Carolina's a good team. Mississippi State is they can kind of mix it up and kind of make it a rough game. Chris Jaynes is a defensive coach. That's a team. You know, I think the SEC was probably the most talented league in college basketball this year. You know, they just beat Tennessee, who I think is probably right on par with North Carolina. So stylistically, like, I just think that's a tough matchup for the Heels. Or if it's Michigan State, like, that's another team that, you know, in the tournament setting, like we saw a year ago, they weren't great during the regular season, and then they went out and beat Marquette in the SA tournament. So that's a spot where I think, you know, potential upset. And then Houston, kind of like Kansas, like, injuries have really, really hurt this team. JoJo Tugler went down a couple weeks ago, backup center. You know, he was probably their most talented front court guy. Juwan Roberts is really, really important to how they play. They play through him in the post a lot, kind of mid post, and have him create for other guys. And, you know, he tried to play in the Big 12 title game after hurting his shin in the semis, and he just didn't look right. And Kelvin Sampson does not trust his bench whatsoever right now. And, you know, Nebraska can shoot a bunch of threes. They've got a stretch five who can kind of play make in the way Houston guards ball screens with hard hedging. You know, that little pop from the center is there. So I think that's a matchup that I think, you know, Nebraska would have a chance, or Texas A&M if that's the case. I went back on that A&M in Nebraska. I almost, if I could have scratched it out. And, you know, I had, the way it worked for The Athletic was I had to, like, submit my bracket right away and then go back through and write about it. And I almost lean A&M when I take a closer look at it. But either of those games is going to be dangerous for Houston because, you know, they just aren't the Houston they were like 2-3 weeks ago.
You know, and there was a just on your bracket, a quick sentence above the bracket that I looked at. I go, is that, could that be right? Since Florida repeated as national champs in 2007, no defending champion has advanced past the Sweet 16?
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Yeah, and Kansas was a one seed last year, and, you know, we all know what happened there. So
right, but I mean, that's unbelievable. But everyone loves UConn, so it feels like that's going to end this year unless there's a shocking upset, right?
Cause they get Auburn in that. They potentially get FAU in the second round. While FAU has not been the same this year, like, they still got all their dudes, and they beat Arizona this year. You know, they beat they went out and won a tournament in Orlando. Like, when they've been at their, you know, I was just there, and Dusty says when they've been at their lowest, it's when they, and their response has been when they play their best. So we'll see. You know, that could be dangerous for UConn. And then, like I mentioned, you know, at the top, Auburn's the number four team at KenPom. They've won all but one of their games this year by double digits of their wins. It looks a lot like UConn of last year, who was number four at KenPom coming in, was a four seed, was the number one seed in their region was Kansas, the defending national champion. Like, there's some eerie similarities there between Auburn and UConn a year ago. So that Sweet 16 game is no gimme if they end up facing the Tigers.
I mean, if you're looking for the best bracket, or the best region as far as the top four seeds, it's the East. Number one, UConn. Number two is Iowa State. And they just went on maybe the most impressive run I've ever seen in the Big 12 tournament.
Yep.
They blew everybody out. The third seed is Illinois. They just won the Big 10 tournament. And then the four is Auburn, like you said, the number four team in KenPom. Why did Iowa State get, it feels like they got disrespected, even though they were absolutely dominant in the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah, I think it's because of their non-conference strength of schedule. I believe that's what the – I turned the show off right as soon as I got the bracket, but I think right as I was turning it off, he was saying something about, you know, they kind of penalized them because of that. And if that's the case, like, I actually don't hate it because go play somebody in the non-conference. Like let's quit scheduling cupcakes. I wish coaches were not in charge of scheduling because that's what we get. But, you know, if that's why they penalize Iowa State, that's fine. Although I thought Iowa State had a shot at that final number one.
Right.
And they looked great this weekend. And you know, Illinois has one of the most talented rosters in the country in my mind. So, yeah, those top four seeds in the East, like, if we get that Sweet 16, those top four seeds there, like, I kind of wish I was going to be in Boston because those are going to be some high-level games.
So if someone's looking for a double-digit seed to pick as maybe a Cinderella in their bracket, mm-hmm. you have New Mexico going to the Elite Eight. Tell me why you like New Mexico.
Well, you know, they've been a team that the metrics have liked all year. They've had some injuries that have kind of slowed them down a little bit, but they've got some guys that can really go off the bounce. Jalen House, the son of Eddie House, Jamal Mashburn Jr., the son of Jamal Mashburn, and then Donovan Dent, their point guard. He's one of the more underrated point guards in the country. He can really, really go. Nelly Jr. Joseph is a big fella in front. He was played for Richard Pitino's dad, Rick, at Iona. And, you know, he's got kind of the size and the girth to, like, match up against, you know, let's say they get Arizona in the Sweet 16 and play Omar Dallo. You know, he's big enough to match up against a guy like that. And those guards, like, they can score it about as well as any guard trio in the country. So if they get hot, I could definitely see them going on a run. And they look great in the Mountain West tournament. And, you know, Baylor just doesn't guard at all. So I could see them getting past the Bears for sure.
Does it surprise you, that part of Baylor? Because, you know, sometimes when I'm trying to fill out a bracket, I go by who has the most NBA talent, you know, and not that always wins out, but sometimes that can be a good indicator of which teams are going to make decent runs. Jared Sutton told us that he thought that Baylor had the best NBA talent in the Big 12.
I agree.
Okay, so, like, and Scott Drew, early in his career at Baylor, I thought I couldn't take Baylor seriously because they didn't guard anybody. But then all of a sudden they became like this defensive and rebounding team, and they started being a good tournament team. What happened?
Well, you know, one, they lost Jerome Tang, who helped coach the defense. And, you know, somebody said to me this weekend, like, they've lost a little bit of their bite since he left. I think it's probably, you know, maybe there's a little bit of that, but it's also, like, they've had really young rosters the last couple of years. And, you know, that's the thing with young guys. Like, a lot of times they just don't guard. Look at Kentucky. They've got maybe the most talented roster in college basketball, and their adjusted defensive efficiency is around 100. So, you know, I think that's what it comes down to, is just youth. And they had a group in, like, led by, Mitchell a couple of years ago, that group was, you know, those dudes guarded. That was just kind of their mentality. And, you know, he's desperate, and, like, his team isn't guarding when he's going back to the zone. And they've been playing a lot of zone, and, man, it's a weak zone, too. Like, you can beat that zone pretty easily. So I just think it's personnel and youth.
All right. Tell people who you have selected for your Final Four in your bracket, and then who will be national champion.
All right, I've got, this will probably throw this in the trash, like, after the first weekend, but I've got UConn. I think they're the most complete team in college basketball. I think they're the best team. I got them in the Final Four, but with some hesitation because of that region.
Right.
I've got them playing Alabama, who lost a lot of games this year, struggled to beat really good teams, but, man, they probably got, you know, one of the best one or two offenses in the country. I think there's going to be some chaos in that West region. So that's the best offense. We'll sneak them through. I don't feel great about that, but, you know, what do you know? And then Purdue down in the Midwest region. Don't just assume it's the same old Purdue. Like, this team's really good. Brayden Smith made a big leap. If you're looking for, like, an advantage in your office pool,
yes.
A team that maybe is pretty good, that could win the national title that not a lot of people are going to pick because of past history. You know what? Past history doesn't really matter in this NCAA tournament. So Purdue would be a worthy national title pick and probably one not a lot of people are going to pick. I got the Boilermakers in there, and then I've got Marquette, which Tyler Kolek is coming off an oblique injury. I'm a little worried about that, but I've loved the Golden Eagles all year. They've been really, really good the last couple months. Their only losses the last two months is to UConn and Creighton are the only two teams that have beat them recently. So that's a really good team. Experience. Got an experienced guard. Got an awesome inside guy in Oseli Ighodaro. So I've got UConn beating Purdue in the national title. I think those have been the best two teams most of the season this year. It'd be a fun title game to see. So two giants going up against each other, Clingan and Edie. So we'll see. But I did see a stat this weekend. Dennis Dobb was showing me nobody who – I think the stat is like who's led in scoring or you know, one of the best players is a 7 foot plus. Their go-to guy is a 7-footer. Has won the NCAA tournament since like Eric Montross or something in '93 for Carolina. So, if that's the case, I'm could end up being really wrong.
Well, it's going to be. It seems like it's a wide open tournament, so it should be. I root for chaos, and we'll see if that happens. CJ, as always, and where are you headed? Where are you going to be at to start things off?
I'm going to Omaha, Dallas the second weekend, and I'll be at the Final Four in Phoenix.
There you are, CJ Moore from The Athletic. CJ, thank you for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
Great stuff from CJ Moore, and I will give you this little tidbit for you guys if you want it. I mean, I don't. You've already got your bracket filled with Kansas winning the national championships. So
I do not want to
interrupt your flow, but. Since KenPom Analytics began in 2002, every national champion but one has been top 25 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. Okay?
Yep.
Every national champion since 2002, since KenPom Analytics began, every national champ has been top 25 in both offensive and defensive efficiency except for one. So, Sam, it's a pretty good bet, right?
Yep.
Would you like to hear the list of teams that are top 25 in both offensive and defensive efficiency?
I would.
Yes.
Please. I'm interested.
Okay.
You have me. I'm paying attention
you like that?
Now.
Okay. Write them down. You ready? It's helping your bracket.
I don't think I'm going to have to write down very many names.
Why is that?
I think there's only one.
Okay.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Arizona?
Okay, that's I'm wrong
one.
Already.
Auburn.
That's two.
UConn.
Three.
Creighton. Houston. Marquette. North Carolina.
This is more than one.
Purdue.
Did you say Auburn?
Yep. And then the other point was made, Bigger Ten tweeted this out. Tennessee and Duke are close enough that with a long run in this tournament, they could also meet the threshold.
Oh, gotcha. Which one's Tennessee and?
Tennessee and Duke.
Okay.
Just throw that out there.
I was thinking top 10 because I think the only one with two teams that's in top 10 on offense and defense is Auburn.
Well, that's the top 25.
So. Yeah.
Tried to.
Yeah. Well,
right.
I couldn't remember what stat it was I had read about Auburn last night being the only team to be in some sort of KenPom ranking.
Auburn feels like a sexy team to pick to get to the Final Four or win it as a four seed.
Yeah.
But the problem is
that
UConn should be pissed, Auburn should be pissed, and Iowa State should be pissed.
Yeah.
We thought Iowa State, or at least I thought, Gary Parrish made the case for them on CBS Sports Network last night that they'd be in contention for that final number one seed, and it turns out they weren't close at all. They're the last two seed.
They are the top rated defensive team in the country according to KenPom, but they're 55th offensively. So we'll see.
You got to see this list of transfer portal additions. I mean, you know. Hey, that's what I got to look forward to. That's what I'm left with right now. So, Brandon Garrison, highly recruited, highly ranked center, 6'11 center from Oklahoma State, freshman, who averaged 7.5 points and 5.5 rebounds a game. He gone, transfer portal. And he was a top recruit, so.
Mr. Garrison's son.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You need a big-time center. There he is. You know, there's another Porter out there. Here, that's what I'm left with now. Back to where we started. Rooting for Mizzou to land another Porter brother. So, what do you think of that? You think that's fool's gold? Should I be doing this?
I think you ought to be getting tickets.
He played at Pepperdine and averaged almost 17 points and 6 rebounds a game, 6'11".
They got Michael Porter Jr.
No, restart it.
Michael Porter.
They got Javon Porter. Javon. I don't know.
They got
Javon. That's it.
Porter Jr.
I'd get tickets.
Michael Porter. I'm getting tickets.
There you go.
It's another Porter.
Yeah. Another Porter in the portal.
Try. Immediate upgrade. Well, let's take a break. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the show. So, Nate, tell us about the K-State fan that confronted you down at the Big 12 tournament. Come on.
The fan?
Was there more than one?
No, it was only one.
Were you confronted by a K-State fan?
Yeah, I was.
Accosted?
A little bit. But we ended up having a nice conversation. Yeah. His name was Ken.
Where was this at?
Turn that negative energy into
positive. It was in the P&L.
So what were you doing?
I was walking by.
He told you his name?
Just walking by.
Yeah.
Innocently walking by.
Yeah.
Hey, Bucati!
What do you call you, Nate or Bucati?
He didn't say my name. He just said.
You say?
Oh, well, maybe he thought you
were.
Where's
all your effing KU gear?
That's how his opener was?
Yeah. And I had a Heart KC t-shirt on, you know?
Because you love KC.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
So he just went up to you.
He's got a Heart KC cup.
Yeah. Well, he was standing behind a railing. He was like in the ice house area. So there's, you know, it's kind of walled off there.
Yes.
So he was standing behind that.
With the commoners.
And I was in the normal area. I was walking through the living room area.
Just walking through, minding your own business.
Well, we're all down there to have a good time with everybody.
Do your job.
We're down there to have a good time with everybody.
Sure.
Mix it up with the fans and everything. And so, I went over and talked to them.
Mix it up with the fans? What do you mean by that?
Well, just like have a good time, you know?
Yeah. Socialize,
you know? We had a good talk, though. He had a t-shirt on that was a Wheel of Fortune puzzle.
Yeah.
It had a few of the letters missing that you might think would spell some sort of four-letter word that began with an F. Then like Joy Hawks or something like that. You know, there was a couple letters.
Oh, this guy was in, wasn't he?
Yeah. And he was.
Did you say I want to solve the puzzle?
I took a guess.
Can I spin?
And
I like to buy a vowel.
We had a good chat though. He say he listens to the show every day. You know, and
he hate listens.
He said this. I took as a compliment. Actually, he said, I really want to hate you, man, but you actually seem like a decent guy.
Yeah,
he's
wrong.
That in your life.
It's like, well, you made one mistake there, sir. So, yeah, we had a good chat, though, after that. He listens to the shows. Ken, if you're listening.
What up, Ken?
How you doing, man?
Did it end on a positive note?
Oh, yeah. We had a good chat. I said, I'm sure that you're not the only K-State fan that hates me. But it's too bad because I don't hate you back, you know. And we
not to your face.
The passion of sports is what makes it fun, you know.
Is that what makes it fun?
Right. That's what they tell me.
Mm-hmm.
But we appreciate you listening, and you know.
Yeah.
It was good to see all the fans.
All my interactions were fairly positive.
Yeah. That interaction turned out to be a positive one. It started off. You know, it started off a little rough. But I think we had a good chat. You know, it turned out we had a lot of, we had some things in common, you know.
Yeah,
so
you know what? That's typically what happens when
you have
actual
common
conversations with people.
I think you're making that up. What do you have in common?
Well, some friends from KCK.
Oh, okay.
You know, an appreciation for people from KCK.
All right.
All that stuff. So, you know, we it was good. You're right, Jake. A lot of times when you actually talk to people face to face, things are a lot better than when you hammer away at a keyboard and stuff like that. You know, so it was good. The Iowa State fans, it has to be said once again, were just phenomenal in the Miller Lite Fan Fest. They took that place over. Thank goodness their team kept winning, because that made a huge difference economically.
Not only did they win, they beat the hell out of everyone.
Man, what an impressive run.
Yeah.
Congratulations to them.
You want to hear Rick Pitino complaining about the NCAA's net rankings?
Yes, please.
I just sent that to you. I don't know if he cussed.
I'd like to hear him complaining.
Nicky curses? No. Rick Pitino won't curse.
I've heard this
already.
I mean, I heard this morning. But
you like it? Or no?
It's a funny pivot for him.
He said the net rankings are fraudulent.
Right, but then he talked about earlier this season how his team sucked.
Oh, well, let's hear from Rick Pitino, who was mad that St. John's did not make the NCAA tournament.
I mean, with 32 in the net. Well, first of all, I think we all should probably never mention that word again, because I think it's fraudulent. You know, my son was 25 in the net, and he was saying he wasn't in with 25 wins. So I think the net's something that shouldn't even be mentioned anymore. I think that we had a good strength of schedule. Ken Pom, why mention him? We were 26 in Ken Pom. So I don't know. It's we tried to play a tough schedule. We tried to do things the right way, and we didn't get in. But, you know, I never make excuses. I respect the committee for what they do. They give their time. They give their energy to it. They didn't think that we measured up to their standards, and we'll take it very positively like men and move forward. We're not going to gripe. We're not going to say we got screwed. We're not going to. None of that helps. Bitterness does not help. I've had enough bitterness in my life to last a lifetime.
That's the truth. Not him, but just in general. Yeah. Bitterness does not help. Although, don't mention the net rankings to him. Again, the only he wants to hear that they're fraudulent. Kim English was also not happy. He did curse, but Jake will not allow me to play the curse word.
Kim's younger, so maybe he still has room for some bitterness.
He said BS, but he said
the whole
it.
Thing. Well, you want me to play the whole
thing? What do I want you to do? What do I want? Who knows what I want? Maybe.
I'll
take the fall for everything else, so why not?
I'll play the dirty version.
I don't have to.
I'm sorry, Drake. I'll play it.
Just beep it.
All right.
Just beep it.
I have the clean one, and I have the dirty
one. I respect Drake too much to do it. But the raw version's everywhere.
See, like, you know, Drake, like,
BS.
I let words like that slip through purposely when somebody, like, you know, Dieter.
We can't control that.
Right. But, like, when I purposely play something, I think that.
So beep it. This is Kim English. You cursed. But he I don't think he really thinks much of analytics. So.
Yeah, I think the analytics are right?
Yeah.
I think you could schedule bad teams in your non-league and beat the snot out of them and beat them by 50 and 60. And I think coaching for so long has been a gentleman agreement. I mean, you have a large lead at the end of the game. You know, for health reasons, you take guys out to get some other guys opportunities to play. You take guys out. But right now, it might be a change in college basketball. But when you get into this league, the analytics aren't going to look very good in league.
Because it's so
You're
competitive.
Playing against some really, really good coaches. You know, we play at Connecticut, and I think they shoot 40% from the field. We're a good defense. They won the game. They should be credited for winning the game. So I do think there are some flaws in the system.
He doesn't like analytics. You know?
Well,
maybe he's right.
Look, the selection committee has an impossible job.
You want to hear what Charles McCleland said about Providence?
Sure.
Not getting in?
From a Providence standpoint, between being 4-7 on the road and not having much stand out in terms of the metric, it led the Friars to just be missing out on the tournament.
Metrics.
That's a really good explanation. You know? That settles it for me.
He's right, you know.
I mean, it's an impossible job. It really is.
And Steven mentioned it earlier, but when five teams got automatic bids that were not going to be in the tournament, it makes your job
bid stealers.
Yeah.
Providence was the only team in the country with six or more quad one wins that was left out of the NCAA tournament. Michigan State, Virginia, and FAU combined for seven quad one wins. So Virginia shouldn't be in. That's one team that I think that Providence should be in. I think I might take Providence over Michigan State, too. So, but I like Kim English. And I want to hear him more. Curse. You know?
Yeah.
I'm with him, though.
Yeah. Well, let's just expand the field. And then.
Yeah, I think the analytics are right?
Right.
Then no one will complain anymore.
That's right. We will we'll take a break back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Sending Julia a good luck text. Even though I'll be there, I wanted to see it during school. Today is her first high school track meet. She'll be at St. Pius today after school.
Good luck, Julia.
Yeah.
Go get him.
Let's do it.
Go get him. What's she running? She jumping?
She's today she's going to do the 100, the 200, and the long jump. And maybe relay or two.
Nice.
First meet, and it's a Pius, so they're going to let them do the events that they're used to that they want to do. And then moving forward, then, I mean, be the top two in each event for varsity. And they'll have some JV opportunities. I'm still wrapping my head around everything with high school track. So
it's fun. I ran high school track my freshman year.
She loves it.
Ran some freshman meets, ran in some varsity meets.
Yeah.
And that was a cool thing.
Yeah. She's ran track for four or five years in grade school. So looking forward to the first high school meet later on today. Coming up, we'll talk to Jared Sutton, talk some college basketball with him here in the 9 o'clock hour. What do you think of Justin Fields finally getting traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers? Well, the Steelers sure reworked their quarterback room.
Wow, did they
ever. At a very reasonable price.
Yeah, $1.2 million for Russell, and then, you know, they have to make a decision on Fields at the end of this year, but they have him on his rookie deal. But think about that. I mean,
who's their starter halfway through the season?
Depends on how they're doing. I mean, depends on how they're doing.
Point is, they have options.
Think about their quarterback room last year was Mason Rudolph, Mitch Trubisky, and Kenny Pickett.
That's going to be an interesting dynamic in that quarterback room, isn't it?
Supposedly, you know, Tomlin called Russell Wilson and said, you're still the starter, whatever. But, you know, like Jake said, they're more concerned about wins than the quarterback putting up gaudy numbers. And so as long as the quarterback plays in the system and doesn't cost him games, then they should be fine. But I mean, that's an interesting dilemma. Do you go with the proven commodity in Russell Wilson that clearly is on the downside of his career and he has the much higher floor but the lower ceiling, or do you try to catch lightning in a bottle and see with better coaching and better weapons around him in a better environment, can Justin Fields live up to his enormous potential? And then if he does, then maybe you found your guy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if I'm them, I offer them the same deal that the Packers offered Jordan Love. You know, extend it out before he hits that fifth-year option. Extend him out and say, hey, we're going to give you, you know, extend it 2 years for, you know, $10, $12 million. and then let him sit a year behind Russell Wilson?
I'd be honest with you, I would go into training camp. I mean, Russell Wilson's a big boy. You know, tell both of them to say, hey, go win the job. Go win it. And remind Russell Wilson, that's how you won your job to begin with in Seattle. They went out and signed Matt Flynn to a free agent contract, remember? When he was put up numbers when he played in Green Bay when he had a chance.
Oh, yeah.
And do you remember the preseason game where Russell Wilson lit it up at Arrowhead Stadium?
I was working it.
Yep. Right? And he was not supposed to be, he's a third-round pick, wasn't supposed to be the starter right away. But he went out and legitimately just won the job in training camp. And so of all people that should get it, he should get it. And, I mean, why wouldn't you? Tell the two guys, go out, compete for this spot. The competition starts now. I would. But it looks like they're going to give Russell Wilson the upper hand early.
I don't think it'll, I mean, I think it's a great move by them to get both those quarterbacks.
Why not?
Get rid of Pickett. I mean, what did they get? A third round for Pickett?
Look at what they gave up for Fields and what they're paying Fields and Russell Wilson.
Oh.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But make it a competition because the Fields, if you get a chance to look at him and it turns out, if he just had good coaching and a decent system around him, he would have been good all along. Start him. But if it looks like he needs some work, okay, well, good. We got a veteran in Russell Wilson.
Or you can just take the pressure off him, you know? I mean, he's had pressure on him the last 4 years. Hey, sit back. You're our future. Russell's going to sit in here for a year. And then you have him if Russell Wilson sputters.
Pressure's a privilege. If you can't handle the pressure, you can't be a quarterback in the NFL.
Well, I mean, it worked out for Patrick Mahomes to sit behind Alex Smith. That's why I don't understand them. All these teams rushing.
Right. I agree with that, but he's a few years into his career now, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. But he never had that opportunity to just sit back and learn. I mean, he had to learn trial by fire.
We'll be right back after this on WHP.